Is it recording now, Thomas?
Yeah.
And David's going to read the preamble, please.
David.
I put anonymous to the fellowship of men and women who share the experience, strength and hope with each other, for they may solve the common problem to help others look from our point of view. The only requirement for membership is to start to stop drinking. When they do, we'll be by membership for self-supporting for our own contribution. I will accept denomination, political organisation or religion. Do not engage in a controversy, not endorsing nor opposing the causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help the alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, David.
If someone starts munching the biscuits, it's collective responsibility. We've got to say there's no eating in here because there's a recording going on. And it's very noisy in crisp wraps, you know? So if you can get people respect the speakers, there's no eating there. And Neil, you alright with how it works?
Yep, new alcoholic.
Oh, Neil.
Neil.
Rarely have we seen a person fail with authority fall on our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They are such unfortunates. They are not at fault, they seem to be born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have or are willing to go to anything to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. In some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we did not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it's too much for us. But there is one who is all power, and that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures of build is nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked for protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took which are suggested as a program to recover. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, we believed that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a certain and fearless moral entry of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all defects of character. Seven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when doing so would injure them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, haven't had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps we take to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged, no one among us has been able to maintain endlessly perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter of the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
Thank you, Neil.
Neil, thanks.
I didn't mention it, but if you could put your phones on silent, please, yeah. And before I introduce you, Tony, were you told this is the audition for next year's Saturday speaking?
No.
And I remember old Jimmy Eyre used to say to me, When you do a chair, don't count the numbers, he says, because it's always about the one you've done in the bath, isn't it? You know, fair play to you turning up, Tony. When did you get into Heathrow then?
I came by ferry, as I always do, yeah. I got to Fishguard on Wednesday afternoon, and I got to Camberley. Camberley on Wednesday night. And I was in touch with Larry on Thursday, as well, I said I would. Let her know I had arrived. Is the door to me? It is.
It is, yeah.
Thanks.
Good man.
Thanks, Bernie. My name is Tony. I'm an alcoholic. Can we have a couple of moments silence to remember why we're really here this morning and to remember the alcoholic that still suffers both inside and outside of these rooms? Thanks, I'm Tony, I'm an alcoholic and by no means an expert on AA or an authority on the programme of recovery of AA. I'm just an example that this programme does work if you want it, and you have to want it. I can't stay sober. I will never be able to stay sober. I will have to be kept sober. And AA is the only thing that has kept me sober. The fear of losing a good pensionable job couldn't keep me sober. Being in mental hospitals, seeing psychiatrists and doctors couldn't keep me sober. The love of my family couldn't keep me sober. Bribery couldn't keep me sober. Fear couldn't keep me sober. The only thing that has kept me sober is AA. And like every alcoholic, I had to make that journey into these rooms, you know. I paid a big price to come into AA, but I also know today that I'll pay a bigger one if I don't stay here, because this is my last post. It's AA or Amen for me, you know. And I've been lucky down through the years, you know. I've had some great sponsorship, and that's very important, very important. I still have a sponsor today because I need a sponsor. I need a sponsor. I need someone that I can, you know, go to for advice and talk to about what I'm thinking about. Because, see, today my problem is not with alcohol. I haven't had any. It's with alcoholism. Alcohol comes in a bottle. Alcoholism comes in Tony. And that's what I have to deal with on a daily basis. And I'm in no doubts whatsoever about the mental aspect of this disease, because, you know, that's where I have to work on this every day. See, it's not what's in a bottle is going to get me drunk, it's what's in my head is going to get me drunk. And I know that from experience. I've been very lucky as well that I've been given one of the gifts that they don't mention too often in AA, the gift of hindsight. I had no hindsight when I was out there drinking. I couldn't see that if I did exactly and drank exactly in the same way, in the same places as I had done the previous night, and get into this trouble I got in, I couldn't see that if I did the same thing was going to happen to me. Couldn't learn. I was unteachable. I had no hindsight. I had no insight into the disease. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I could name a lot of alcoholics. I could point them out to you, but I wasn't one, because I was able to stay stopped. During Lent, for 7 weeks, I came up drinking. Did it every year. I wasn't an alcoholic. If I was an alcoholic, I couldn't do that. Jesus Christ, what are you talking about? You know? And I had no foresight whatsoever. I couldn't see forward. The furthest I could see was the next drink. The next drink. I've learned down through the years, you know, because this has been my university of life, you know, AA has. It's been my college of knowledge. Anything I know today, I've learned in these rooms, through the people that I've met down through the years. You know, through the working of these steps, which is the program. Steps is the program, you know. And I know today that there was a lot wrong with me ever before I picked up a drink. I was fearful when I was a young chap. You know, I was insecure. I was, as they would say today, a disruptive child when I was young. I was afraid. I was a thief. I wasn't robbing money for drink. I was robbing money out of my father and mother's purse to buy comics and sweets so I could share them with my friends and be the big fella, you know. There were a lot of things wrong with me ever before I drank. So I can't blame the problems I have in my life today just on drink alone. It was there. It was there ever before I picked that drink. And then when I picked up that drink at 13 years of age, whoosh, it was like throwing the petrol onto the fire. Wow, this is great. Jesus. You know, I wasn't shy anymore. I was able to go up to any of the girls I saw and ask them to go out and dance or ask them for a date or, you know, I wasn't shy anymore. Wasn't afraid anymore. Come on, yeah. No, I'll give you a fight. No, I don't care how many or anything. You won't get the better of me, I'll tell you. I wasn't afraid of anyone. Jesus. And I could tell fabulous jokes and stories. I was the life and soul of the party. In the pub. You know. But something used to happen between the pub and the front door. Because when I walked in the front door of my home, everyone scattered. Because I came in like a roaring lion. As my poor mother, Lord Rester, used to say, an antichrist. Here's this antichrist coming now. Look at him. Look at the state of them. Oh my God. And then, change that program. I don't want to watch that shite. Get up out of that chair, I want to sit there. Where's my dinner? You know, at 11:30 in the night time. 12 o'clock, where's my dinner? And if there wasn't anything for me, wow. It all kicked off then, I tell you. And that was the way I was, you know, that was the way I was. And the drinking got worse, that, you know, all the other things, the blackouts. I couldn't remember where I was, who I'd been with, what I had spoken about, how I came home, what direction I came from, what pub I was in. You know, some days I used to go in the pub and stick my head in the door, half expecting to be told, get out of here. And nothing used to happen. And I used to go up and I'd order a drink and he'd serve me. And I used to think to myself, Jesus, I must have been all right last night. And then there was other night, days. I'd go into the pub. And as soon as I'd walk in the door, you have some neck to come back in here after what was going on last night, you bastard. Get out. I didn't know. I didn't know what I had done. Where I'd been. What I'd said. You know, and I became more violent in my drinking as well. You know, physically, with people in pubs and chip shops, even on the street on the way home. I was gobby as well, you know, big mouth. You know, the mouth used to go into gear before the brain. Sometimes it still does, but, you know, not as often today. And eventually, anyway, they had to lock me up in a mental hospital because, you know, I become a danger to people, danger to the public. I was put in there under a white form, a PUM form. It was in the 1953 Mental Health Act over in Ireland. It was a person of unsound mind. And they put me into a mental hospital. And it's amazing they sent me to a mental hospital. You know, it wasn't a general hospital they put me into, or a maternity hospital, an orthopedic hospital. They put me into a mental hospital. Because they obviously knew there was something not right up there in my head. I didn't think there was anything wrong with me at all. I thought people were overreacting again. For fuck's sake. Jesus. You know, this is OTT. I don't need to go there. But they put me in there anyway, and that was the first hospitalisation I had with this disease. 1979. In Belmont Park Hospital in Waterford. And I stayed there, I think, about 4 months altogether between being an inpatient and a day patient. But it didn't matter because I was suspended from work anyway, because they were trying to debate whether I'd ever work again in my profession. And I was a nurse, you know. And I was going around Kilkenny trying to kill people instead of portraying the nursing profession of kindness and well-being, you know. And eventually I got out of there, but before I got out of there, and while I was there, I had to go to AA meetings. It was part of the treatment program. And when I left, I kept going to the meetings, and there wasn't as many in Kilkenny as there are now. There's a meeting there every day now, and every night, and most days. And there weren't as many in those days. But I went to as many of them as I could go to, because I was still suspended from work. I was out of the family home at this stage. They didn't want me in there. And the guardie, were waiting for me to slip up again, because I was good at that. Give Tony an off rope and he'll hang himself. Don't worry. Oh, it's only a matter of time before he fucks up again, you know. We keep an eye on him. As soon as we see him acting bizarre, we'll throw him back in there, you know. And I went to AA. And I went religiously to AA for about 18 months. Then I stopped going. Because I got fed up listening to the same people saying the same things day in, day out, same old stuff. You know, they were telling me that I had to work the program, I should get a sponsor. And I had that, how to describe it in the 12 and 12, my mind was just savage. I didn't want to do anything else except stop drinking. What more did I want? I'm not changing. Why should I? So I stopped going to the meetings. But I didn't drink for another 2.5 years. You know, I didn't drink for almost 4 years. But I drank again. Because, see, I can't stay sober myself. I have to be kept sober. Something is going to have to keep me sober. Because I can't do it on my own. And I started drinking again. And at this stage, I had done a geographical. I was over here. I moved over here in 1983 in my sober years, as I thought. Not drinking years, definitely not sober, you know. Dry drunk years, you know, and the hangovers that go with dry drunkenness as well, you know. I had all that stuff. So I drank again, and, you know, I more or less was back at square one within 2 weeks. I was back as bad drinking, and the things were happening, picked up by the police over here, being put into overnight, kept overnight, accident and emergency wards, thrown out of the pubs. It was only left, there was only one pub in the area that used to tolerate me in the end. It was a pub called the Bull and Butcher, and it was run by a Dublin chap. But between Crowthorne, Sandhurst, Little Sandhurst, Blackwater, I couldn't go to any pub. There was only one pub I could go to in the end. The only ones that tolerated me. And it was the August bank holiday in 1987. And I went out that morning, at Friday morning. I don't remember anything else then until the Thursday afternoon. I ended up in the house that I was living in on my own. The back door was open. Radio was blaring. The place looked as if there had a bomb dropped in it. There were beer cans and bottles and plastic bottles and cider bottles and every kind of a bottle. Lying around the place. And the bloke on the radio was saying what time it was, what station it was, and who he was, but he never said what fucking day it was. Because I didn't know what day it was. And I wish he had told me what day it was. Because I didn't want to knock on the neighbour's door and say, excuse me, what day is today? I hadn't a clue. I don't know why the phone was still on, because I was always on call when in the work I was in. But the phone was on. And I rang AA. And I don't know where the number came or the talk came out, but it was just one of those moments of clarity. And I said, fuck it, I'll ring AA and see can they do anything and help me. And it was the person on central office was in Dublin, in London at the time. And Radcliffe Gardens. And he told me what day it was. And I said, Jesus Christ. So he said he'd get someone to call around and bring me to a meeting. And sure enough, that evening, two people came around and they brought me off to a meeting. And the first meeting I went back to was the Friday night step meeting in Farnborough. And I don't remember much of it, but I helped a hell of a lot of people that night, I know that. Because they just took one look at me and they said, well, if that's what happens, someone that goes back out drinking again, I'm not going to chance it. I was crying. I was asleep. I was smoking two fags at the one time. I was interrupting. I didn't know what the hell was going on. And all they were saying, shh, you can talk after the meeting, shh. I fell down the stairs because it was upstairs. I got up, I'm all right, but I couldn't get down. I fell down the stairs. But I was all right. I didn't hurt myself that much. And for the next 2 weeks, I was brought to meetings every day and every night. I'm sure a lot of you might remember the man that brought me was Bob the Pipe from Yeadley. And he brought me to every meeting he could. I remember the first meeting I went up here was in Gun Street. Over, it used to be on Sunday morning, wasn't it?
Yes.
Sunday morning was. That was the first meeting I came to in Reading. And the next meeting I came to then, I met Walter, who was to become my sponsor. And I met Raymond. I think I met you, Bernie, as well at that meeting as well. And I was rough. I really was rough, because this time the physical aspect of the disease had caught up with me. You know, I was blown out like a Michelin man. The kidneys weren't excreting the poison on me anymore. I was sweating profusely, shaking like a leaf. Didn't know what was going on. The head was racing, you know. I remember Walter, he said to me, look, he said, you're in a bad old way, I'll help you if you let me, he says. And I said to him, go on then, help me. I said, go on. What'll I do about the money I owe to the bank? I owe him 12,500. What'll I do about that? And I owe money to money lenders as well. And listen, the girlfriend I had, she's fucked off. I have to get her back. She has to get back. And I'm out of work. I might be suspended. What am I going to do about that? So he looked at me and he laughed. Best thing you can do, he said, is don't drink and go to meetings. Lots of them, he said. And I thought to myself, Jesus, if that's the best advice I'm going to get, I'm fucked. I'm fucked, I said. But anyway, hindsight. Remember I mentioned that word, hindsight? Yeah, I can look back today and see that that was exactly the right advice he gave me. It was the only advice he could give me. It was the right advice that I got. And I only know that today through hindsight. You know, this gift that I've been given is in sobriety, you know. He took me through the steps, this program. He told me to keep them simple. He said, if you keep them simple, you'll have an idea of what you're trying to do. He said, and if you have an idea of what you're trying to do, you might be able to do it. So I did that. And in fact, he took me through the steps twice, you know. Because I'm a slow learner that way, you know. Because I have terrible attitude. I had when I came into these rooms. And I still can have them today, you know. An attitude, a habit of thinking, you know. I was talking to the girls there before the meeting. You know, I have a lot of physical habits too. You know, I'm right-handed. Instinctively, if someone throws something, I go and catch it. I shave with my right hand, you know. I write with my right hand. It's a habit I have, you know. Physical one. Now try and change that. Try writing with your left hand. Try shaving with your left hand. Try putting on your mascara and with women with your left hand and your right hand, the opposite hand. Try putting on your mascara. See how that works out. You know? What'll happen is, you know, after doing it for a day or maybe two, you say, oh, to hell with this. It's a waste of time. So I have attitudes, thinking habits, which have to be changed. And it's hard to change those. I'm still working on it, by the way. I'm still working on it, thank God. I don't know it all yet. Maybe one day I will. Maybe not. Well, I will, because actually my sponsor back in Ireland, Brian, he told me the only thing, he says, you'll know when you have this right is the day they put you to bed with a shovel, he said. I said, yeah, you're probably right. He says, I know I'm right. See, they always know the right, these sponsors. You know, I hear them sometimes, you know. But thank God, you know, down through the years, I've had an opportunity to sponsor people, you know, and this program does work because we have to pass it on to keep it. We have to work on it on a daily basis. You know, I did the first three steps of this program this morning before I even did anything else. Because the first three steps of this program hasn't changed for me. I'm still an alcoholic. I'm still powerless over alcohol. There is still unmanageability in my life. I slip from sanity to insanity on a regular basis during the day. Thank God I don't stay too long in the insane thinking these days. But it comes there, it comes through without any prompting whatsoever. It comes straight through. You know? And some of the solutions to the problems I have, they are really, really serious. I remember I was in the Edinburgh DOP and I had this psychiatrist and he said, what you are, he says, is a homicidal psychopath. I said to him, I am not. He said, well, from what you tell me, he says, it indicates that there are tendencies in that direction. I'm going to have to be kept sober again today because, you know, I can't stay sober on my own. I'm going to have some power to keep me sober, to keep me away from that next drink. Not the first drink. I don't talk about the first drink anymore. I had that fucking years ago, when I was 13. It's the next one that's going to nail me. That's the one that's going to nail me, the next one. And I ask God, the God of my understanding today, you know, to help me remember the things I've learned in these rooms because they work. And give me the strength to use them. And to put my big-headed and big-shotism in my back pocket for today, you know. I was able to wake up in a dry bed this morning. I didn't go to bed last night with the light on all night in case someone came in and attacked me. I didn't have to lock the door, you know. I was able to walk out that front door and I didn't care who I met. I owed nothing to no one. I hadn't stolen from anyone yesterday. I hadn't bad-mouthed anyone yesterday. I hadn't told lies to anyone yesterday. I had money in my pocket. I didn't have to duck and dive, paying the fare coming up on the train. You know, I wasn't afraid to go out and meet the world. And let it meet me, you know. And that's all come about from practicing the program. I do a step four every year and a step five. That's how I do it. I do it for me. It works for me, and if it works for me, I do it for me because I deserve it today. Because there are still defects of character which still rear their ugly head every now and then. And I also look at the big book and it says, you know, that old timers who have skimped on this step have paid dearly. Now, if I'm sitting around the rooms of AA and I'm 30 years sober and I've done 2 step 4s in my time or 2 step 5s, there is no rationalising or justifying that I can't say I've fucking skimped on that step. It doesn't say in any of the steps we have to do once only. Steps are for going up. They're also for coming down. They don't just go up. You don't go from 1 to 12 and then say, that's it, I'm there. You know, sometimes you have to come back down a bit of the way, or maybe all the way, right down to the bottom step again, and have one leg on the ground and one on the first step. There is a manageability in your life. You're powerless over alcohol, but you haven't picked up a drink. So you're in there with a chance. So let's get up onto that step 1, and then to 2, and we'll move back up the way. And that's how it works for me, you know. I harmed a lot of people during my drinking. Everyone I came into contact with were affected in a different way. When I came in, I thought harm meant the, you know, the people I had beaten up on the streets and in the pubs and, you know, beaten up with 2x2s and that sort of thing. I thought it was the physical, the people who I had punched. But I learned in these rooms that I harm people in lots of ways. I harm people by not doing things too. By not sending a Mother's Day on my mother's, you know, day, her birthday, Easter, Christmas. They never got a card from me. But if I didn't get one from them, I was on that phone immediately. Bad mountain. You're only a shower at this, that, the other thing. That was the way I was. Savage. Savage. And I hurt people emotionally as well. And I always mention this when I'm sharing about how I affected people's lives. I have a sister. I'm 66, by the way. She's 63. She's never taken a drink in her life. Why? Because she saw what drink was doing to me when I was that age. And she became afraid to pick it up in case she turned out to be like me. I affected people's lives. I made them make decisions they wouldn't normally have made because of the way I had become and the way I was as a result of my drinking. I still have a list. There are people still on my amends list who I haven't met yet. I don't know whether I will ever meet them. But if the opportunity arises, I can stand up and say, look, I have to talk to you about the past, if you want to. I have to be willing to make amends. That's all. And I have to have that list. And do as it says on the package. I do what it says on the package. You know, if it says make a list, make a list. Don't rely on your head to keep this list, because your head will say, nah, you don't need to put him on it. Nah, fuck it, he's dead. Nah, he did as much to you as you did to him. You know, that's what my head will tell me. There'll be no one on the list, you know. Be no list. And then I'm the problem, you know. I'm the problem still, you know. It's not them. It's me. It's me. And how I react to them. And how I think about them. I'm the problem. So I have to do my inventory, not theirs, on a daily basis. Step 10, you know. I look at me. Am I doing the right things here? You know, and I know I've got the wrong change here. Will I go back with it or will I not? Oh, fuck if I go back with it. Here. Look, you might be short tonight. I think you've given me too much. Oh, my God. Thank you. Do the next right thing and the next right thing will happen. I won't have to go home that night thinking, oh, geez, I wonder will she lose her job. Jesus, maybe it's happened before and this was the last straw. Jesus, I should have brought it back. I don't have to have any of that stuff going around my head when I'm going to bed tonight. You know, don't have any of that stuff. And 10, 11, 12, you know, they're the maintenance steps. You know, where I grow up first three, you know, I dry up. The second three, I own up. I own up to the defects I have and the harm I've caused. The next three, I make up. And then the last three, I grow up. I grow up. I get backbone instead of wishbone. You know, I become a decent person instead of ever, you know, the type of person I was. I have to change this concept of a higher power. Because, see, if I'm relying on the higher power I had when I was 3 months sober, it means nothing's changed. It means nothing's changed in that direction. And the 11th step asked me to improve our conscious contact. Get a better belief, conviction about this program and where it can bring you, and knowing that things will be all right if you do the next right thing, you know. And then, having had a spiritual awakening, and I'm still awakening. I haven't had it yet, the spiritual awakening. I'm still awakening. I'm still coming to. You know, it says, come. Come to. Come to believe. I'm still coming to, you know. I try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all my affairs. You know, I used to wonder, you know, that our lives have become unmanageable. You know, our lives have become unmanageable. Why did it say lives? Why don't that my life had become unmanageable? No, I have a lot of lives. I have the life of a son when my parents were alive. I have the life of a brother to the sister that I have alive. I have a life as a member of this fellowship. I have a life as a neighbour. I have a life as a partner. I have a life as... I have lots of lives. And I practice these principles in all those areas as best I can. And all I'm asked to do is my best. And up to today, my best has been good enough. By no means has sobriety been a joyride for me. I've had lots of things happen. Lots of not so nice things happen down through the years. But I haven't had to pick up a drink on any of them. On any of them. I was one of the lucky ones that got an opportunity to make amends to my parents. The ones that had put a court order about me going back to Ireland and not coming within 440 yards of the family home. I couldn't come within a quarter of a mile of the family home. You got a court order. Because, see, I rang him up and I said to him, look, things aren't working out too well over here. I think I'll go home. There was silence at the end of the phone. We'll see. Is that all you have to say? Well, yeah, I might go home. A couple of days later, I got a registered letter with a court order preventing me from going home. They didn't want that bastard back in their house again. You know? I got the opportunity to have 6 years before my mum passed away to make amends. And this time she knew that something was different about me. That this time it wasn't just one of those, you know, promises that I had broken so many times down through the years. She knew that this time something had happened. And I remember that she came over here to visit me, and I was the whole day keying myself up, you know, to do the big amends. I said, I'll do it after the dinner now, when she's, you know, I'm sitting there and she's kind of half dozing, maybe, you know, I get in there. You know, I was planning. Oh, I'm always fucking planning me, you know. Oh, yeah. Even when it comes to making amends, I plan, you know. You always have to have plan B. And here I was, and I was thinking, how will I do it? How will I do it? How will I do it? So anyway, she was sitting there, and I got the chair, and I said, ma'am, I have to talk to you about, you have to talk to me about that. And she said, you keep going to them fucking meetings, she said. And that's the end of it. Right. See how hard that was. And you know why that happened? See, I can't change anyone. I'll never be able to change anyone. I'll be only able to change myself. But once I change, people change towards me. And they say, ah, maybe this time is different. Maybe I'll cut him a bit of slack. Maybe I'll see how it goes. He seems to be doing something about himself. And I was, because I was going to weigh in. I wasn't taking a drink at a time. I was trying to work this program as best I could on a daily basis. I was sticking with the winners. You know? Who are the winners? The winners are the ones that don't drink on a daily basis, go to meetings, work the program, pray to God, and stick with the winners. That's who they are. That's what I was doing. I had almost 25 years to make amends to my father. We had a great time together. We went to places that I never thought would be possible, you know. I had a great relationship with him in the end, you know, when he passed away. And that morning he passed away, I was going up to Dublin for a hospital appointment, and I went in to see him. And he said to me, where are you going so early? I'm going up to Dublin, I said. Jesse, he said, mind yourself up there, that's a rough place. I won't be anywhere near the rough places, I said. I'm going up to the hospital. I went to the appointment, and when I came out, I saw I had 3 missed calls. And I put on the phone, and he passed away while I was up there. But I had seen him that morning, you know. I've been able to make amends to my sisters, because I did affect them. I used to knock them about, you know. Not so much beat them, but push them. Get out of the way, barge past them. You know, if they were in the seat, as soon as they got up, I'd sit down and I wouldn't get up again, you know. All that sort of stuff. One of my sisters passed away there just last November. She got a brain hemorrhage out of the blue, just like that. See, we don't know how long we're going to live. She was fine. 10 minutes to 11, she was on Facebook. 5 minutes to 11, she was dead. Happened like that. 60 years of age. Her birthday was just there last month. It would have been her 60th. You know? Because that's life. Life throws up rotten things at times, you know, but I didn't have to drink on any of them. I was in hospital. Because I worked in the prison service, and I got badly scalded with a bucket of water that was thrown, not at me, but intended for someone else, and I just stepped in the way to push him out of the way. But I got it. And for a long, long time I was out working. I was all padded up, and I didn't have to drink. It gave me an opportunity to go to lots of meetings. I was able to do day meetings again, you know. And then in 2015, I got a blood clot on my spinal cord, which paralysed me from the waist down. I was in a wheelchair for over 2 months. They said I'd never walk again. Don't ever tell an alcoholic what he'll never do. You know, don't ever tell him that you'll never walk again. It only makes me more determined to walk again. I show that fucker. And I have, and they've been wrong, and they can be wrong, you know, they can be wrong. I had to go for a lot of intense physiotherapy. And while I was in that physiotherapy, and they were doing a scan on me at the end of my time, they discovered I had cancer. So I had to have a kidney out, because I had a cancerous growth on my kidney, which was as big as the kidney itself. And apparently I was very lucky, because it's one of the cancers that don't show signs and symptoms until it's well too late. That has spread into the lymph. They're still monitoring me for that. But But look, I can't let that cloud hang over my head. I can't. I've been given a reprieve on a daily basis to live life and enjoy myself. I come into sobriety to be happy. I didn't come in to be fucking miserable. If I want misery, I know where I can get any amount of it. You know? I still do 4 meetings a week, a minimum, 4 meetings a week. I'm still doing service. The Saturday night meeting over on the Waterford Road in Kilkenny, I do the teas, you know? I do the teas. Because why? It helps to keep me sober. I've done lots of 12-stepping down through the years, and every one of them has been a success. I didn't drink. There's only one person that I 12-stepped that I know is still in the fellowship, but I didn't drink. I have to do what I need to do so that I don't take that next drink, because that's the one that's going to be amen for me, you know. I've talked a lot about the steps of my own personal life, but we can't forget the traditions. They're there for a reason. The 12 steps keep Tony sober. The 12 traditions keep AA sober. It keeps this fellowship alive so that I can stay alive. Because this is the only thing that keeps me sober, AA. It's the only thing that's worked. Nothing else has. And I know today nothing else will. So I have to keep it. I have to keep those traditions. I can recite the 12 steps, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, down, word for word. I'm not able to do that with the traditions, but I know they're there. And they're there for a reason. And they're there so that I have to do my part as best I can to maintain the fellowship. Because, as it says in the preamble, we're a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope. And I hope maybe I've done that today, but it's been great to be here and it's great to be asked. And thanks Bernie and Larry for asking me to be here today. And it's lovely to see some, I won't say old friends, friends that I know for a long, 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 long time. And also to meet some new ones. I leave it at that, Bernie. All right, thanks.
Cheers, Tony. Well, it's good as I'm going to come. I can remember seeing you at a Saturday meeting and you come in, you know, and I'd heard about you, you know, and I'd heard about this wild Irishman, right? And I've met you, right? And I was still thinking, who are they on about? You with me? And I went up to Walters, you with me? Right? And then Connemara Raymond ran at the time. She was a bit lively, I was a bit lively. The other two were a little bit quieter, weren't they?
You know? Yeah.
And I remember one night we were in the meeting and Tony's got enthusiasm, John, hasn't he? You with me? Right. And if he takes a notion in his head that someone's blagging the meeting, you'd be off for Christ, they don't rear up, Tony. You with me? And we was in this meeting and Raymond was biting on this fella. He was an English fella, well to do sort of thing, you know. And he kept coming in saying his name was, say, Harvey, and I'm a chronic alcoholic, chronic. And he kept saying chronic. And Raymond kept tutting. And I'm starting, you know, not even with some. So I'm now starting to feel responsible that Raymond's tutting at this fucking fella, saying he's a chronic alcoholic, right? And I've got all the responsibility of the meeting. I don't know where I'm picking this up from, right? And Raymond's there, and he's got the old head on him going like that. And he's looking over at me, and I'm thinking he's looking at me to me to say something to him. You know, you just me, don't you? So I come in, I says, my name's Bernard, I'm an alcoholic. God, it's my judge, I didn't mean to frighten the bloke, you with me? I'm not sure. I said, my name's Bernard, I'm an alcoholic. I said, what the fuck do you think we are? The Pepsi generation. Raymond's gone. Yeah. And the poor bloke, he shit himself, you know. And, but that was lively, that the meeting was down the Oxford Road, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean,
I mean, I look back now, you know, and I think, God, it was. But no one hurt no one, though, did
no,
they?
No.
There was that. Poor old Walter, everyone used to go, it was like a doctor's surgery down at the Walter's flat, wasn't it? You'd go sit in there.
Pick a chicken.
Yeah. You'd go in there with Walter, thinking you got, you know, he'd plant a seed in your head, and you think, he says, you better come round and see me. He said, I'm thinking about you, right? So you'd go up to see Walter, thinking, well, I'm trying to swear. You know, I'd be worried, because you're this classic item, like you, I'm either a worrier or a warrior, and I can't get the between the two, you with me? Right? And I got up there, Mrs. Walker, he just wanted to use me as a son. There was nothing wrong with me. He just wanted me to go there so he could bombard me with all his issues and everything like that, you with me? But he died quick, though. Well, we all spent, we all died quick, weren't we? Yeah. But, I mean...
Died at my fourth sober anniversary.
And he died on my September. Yeah, that's my birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and he always used to say, didn't he, he was an awful devil, though, wasn't he, really?
You never say, if you ask Walter, how are you, Walter, he'd never say he was fine, he's okay, or grand, or nice. He'd always say, I used to be a lot worse. I used to be an outward.
And there used to be, I've got to be careful now, this is being recorded, right?
Oh.
But Walter was a great joker, right? There used to be a fella in him, fella that had a few quid and he had a few shops, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And Walter used to make out, he says, oh, I've got to make amends to someone. He said, I've been in a shop, so you're with me,
yeah,
isn't
no.
He says, I've been in the shop and I've nicked a Mars bar. And the son, this bloke, he hasn't done it. This fella's got a few quid, he'd go up through the roof, wouldn't he? You know, he'd buy more. He'd, what would just love it? You know, but it was, there was some good laughs. But and Jimmy, you know, used to say that. He used to say, if you make them laugh, they come back.
Yeah.
That's what they used to say. You know, you get them laughing, you get an alcoholic in a split second, they can forget about the world outside that door, and they're having a laugh in here. And you feel good from in outwards, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, and it was good to see you, Tony.
Do you enjoy it? Enjoy sobriety, not to endure it.
Yeah. He used to say, no, well, he said, if you're happy, inform your face.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to have a cup of tea briefly, yeah? And if you don't talk at the tea, because people are in a rush behind you, yeah?
Right.
So get your cup and move over there.
Right, OK.
Is that bullying people?
No. That's just being well organised.
Yeah, all right. So, we're off for a cup of tea, yeah?
Yeah. Michelle, you, serenity prayer?
No, we've got no speaker.
All right, OK.